It's Wednesday, November 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Myanmar looks ahead as votes are being counted. President Obama and Congress at odds again.
As veterans, we don't ask for handouts. We just want that chance.
It's Veterans Day in the United States. Many need a job. Also ahead, it's a huge shopping day in China. And we hear from Italian singer Andrea Bocelli. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. European Union observers Tuesday applauded the election process in Myanmar leading up to Sunday's historic parliamentary elections that appear set to hand the pro-democracy opposition National League for Democracy, headed by Aung San Suu Kyi, a smashing victory. Trevor Wilson is a senior fellow at Australia National University and a former ambassador to Myanmar. He told VOA's Victor Beatty he believes the military will stay true to its word and remain out of the political process.
They've made public statements, not once, not twice, but repeatedly, that they didn't want to get involved in the politics anymore, that they would respect the results of the election, provided that was a free and fair election. The other reason, I think, is that Aung San Suu Kyi and the NLD have been getting to know the military quite well while they've been in parliament together. Aung San Suu Kyi went to the Armed Forces Parade in 2013 in March, and she was invited again in 2014, couldn't attend because she was sick. So they've been getting to know each other quite well. The other thing that people sort of sometimes forget about is that she's not hostile towards the army. So I reckon they can negotiate something that's acceptable, and they can probably work together in a reasonable sort of way. They won't always agree, but maybe it'll be better than we all think.
The operative word there is negotiation. Obviously,
yes.
The NLD is on the cusp of what could be a smashing victory, but this also ushers in a period of uncertainty, doesn't it? Because it's not clear how Aung San Suu Kyi will share power with the military.
That's right. I mean, they do have to negotiate over the question of responsibility for national security, for example. In the present constitution, the chief of the army has the right to nominate the defense minister, the home affairs minister, and the border affairs minister. Now, are they going to continue with that arrangement? If they're not going to continue with that arrangement, they have to amend the constitution. I mean, the other problem they have that's unresolved, of course, is the ongoing insurgencies with the Kachin people in the north and with various groups in Shan State. Whoever's the head of the government will have to work with the army in dealing with the insurgencies. You know, how do they strike an agreement for a ceasefire? How do they end the fighting? What do they do about all the people who are involved in one way or another in the fighting? That's quite complicated.
What will be the top priority of the next government, whoever takes power?
Suu Kyi has said that she wants to do things to improve the lot of the ordinary people, economically, socially, culturally, and there are a lot of things there that need to be done. Most of the reforms that have been undertaken in the last 3 or 4 years, actually the benefits haven't been felt very much by the ordinary people yet. They will be.
Aung San Suu Kyi has predicted her NLD will take about 75% of the seats in both houses of parliament. It needs two-thirds or 67% to form a majority government. Well, we stay with Myanmar as we now check out how the online community is responding to the election. And for more on that, our G. Abby Lee joins me in the studio. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. The mixed reaction to the Myanmar election is also reflected on Twitter. Some people are tweeting that maybe the quotation around the word free when describing the election isn't necessary anymore. That shows more people are seeing it as a genuinely free and fair election. Many media outlets are tweeting that this is Myanmar's first free election in 25 years. That's mainly because the opposition party is expected to win. Reuters sent out this tweet: Suu Kyi heads for landslide victory in Myanmar election. BBC correspondent Fergal Keane also tweeted this: I've seen many elections. For dignity and genuine faith in democracy, this rivaled South Africa in 1994. Bravo to all Burmese who voted. Burma is Myanmar's old name.
Well, what's the other reaction to this?
Well, that has to do with one ethnic group that's banned from participating in the election, the Rohingya Muslims. There is a Twitter account named Voice of Rohingya at Voice Rohingya. That account tweeted this, 1.3 million hashtag Rohingya not allowed to vote. Ongoing genocide, history of ethnic cleansing, systematic apartheid. Hashtag Myanmar election.
I see. So now, what about Aung San Suu Kyi herself? Can we find her on Twitter?
Well, kind of, sort of, because Aung San Suu Kyi's political aides manager official account at Official Suu Kyi and her own tweets are signed with ASSK, but we don't see very many of them. Mm. And the account is not as popular as you would imagine because it has fewer than 2,000 followers so far.
Well, speaking of which, how often is this election being mentioned on Twitter?
Now, for that, I went on to the Topsy Analytics website. In the last 24 hours, hashtag Myanmar election was used more than 3,000 times, and hashtag Myanmar was used more often at 4,000 times. Before I go, Jim, I wanted to say that some of Aung San Suu Kyi's quotes are also floating around Twitter, and here's an example. The only real prison is fear, and the only real freedom is freedom from fear. As you know, she had been under house arrest for 15 years. That's all for me today.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, G. She is our social media correspondent, and she tweets from our International Edition account. That's at @VOA_IE. You can also follow her on her own account at G. Abby Lee. I'm out there at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
VOA's International Edition. Days before the Obama administration is expected to issue a long-awaited plan to close the U.S. detention facility at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, the Republican-led Congress ruled out a key provision for such a plan to go forward. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins me from Capitol Hill to explain.
Since 2008, when Barack Obama first ran to be president, it was a promise that he would close the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay, which he argued, and many Democrats argue, is a stain on America's international reputation and serves as a recruiting tool for terror groups. And for many years, during the Obama administration, members of Congress have said, well, fine, where's your plan? Any day now, the administration is supposed to unveil a plan that it has crafted to close the facility and to bring the remaining several dozen detainees to maximum security U.S. prisons. It just so happens, however, that the Senate gave final congressional approval to a defense authorization bill, which covers everything that the Pentagon does, including at Guantanamo Bay. And in that bill, it specifies that no detainees from Guantanamo Bay may be transferred to U.S. soil.
This comes amid the backdrop of the investigation of the downing of an airliner in Egypt, which some people are saying was brought down by an ISIS bomb. And that has people really scared about the implications of terrorism here in the United States.
The two things aren't directly related. However, we are in a period where the public has sort of pricked up its ears about terrorist threats. And I can't imagine that won't have an impact in the public debate over Guantanamo. Now, very quickly, the White House has already reacted to this legislation that the Senate passed and said that it is disappointed that this language prohibiting detainee transfers is in the bill, but that this is not going to affect the administration's plans to move forward with closing Guantanamo Bay. Everyone is waiting to see what that plan will look like. Presumably, President Obama could, even while he signs this bill, have a signing statement saying, well, I signed this bill, but I don't recognize that portion that deals with detainees. And frankly, it was George W. Bush's executive order that set up Guantanamo Bay, and it can be my executive order that shuts it down. It really looks like we're going to have another one of those confrontations between the Obama White House and a Republican-led Congress as to who wields authority on really important matters facing the nation.
We'll be keeping up with the story. Thanks to you, VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Thanks, Jim.
On November 11th each year, the United States honors its military veterans. Unfortunately for many, as they return to civilian life, they find no place in the workforce. Alberto Pimenta picks up the story.
In 2012, Joshua Pelling, a young Army veteran, got job rejection after job rejection.
As veterans, we don't ask for handouts. We just want that chance. And I know many employers that I approached upon getting out didn't want to give me a chance.
During his time in the Army, Joshua worked in maintenance for helicopters. But when he went back to civilian life, he couldn't get a job.
It was very disheartening to feel that way as somebody who felt like I served my time. And there were some times that I did feel stuck.
After September 11, 2001, the United States sent hundreds of thousands of troops to Afghanistan and Iraq. American culture prides itself on the noble service of veterans. However, more than 7% of those who served after 9/11 are unemployed, higher than the national average.
They are skills that we use to prepare for war and that we use in war. When we take those home and we come back, there are all sorts of stigmas that are associated with that.
But in 2015, he heard of NS2Serves, a nonprofit created by SAP National Security Services to train veterans in data management, an industry with a high demand for recruits. Retired Vice Admiral Joe Kernan runs the three-month program.
They could come here with virtually nothing, and candidly, four or five of them have. They've come here from nothing. They came off the street. They didn't have a place to live. They didn't have a job, and they said, listen, I got to get through this course. I mean, this is my life.
NS2Serves has turned around the lives of many young veterans. The opportunity gave Joshua purpose.
It's just been an incredible journey. I have a sense of direction now. I feel that there's hope for the future.
Alberto Pimenta for VOA News, Herndon, Virginia.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Visualizing the number 11, you could possibly see it as two single people standing together. And that's exactly the symbolism being used in China for today, November the 11th, now known by many as Singles Day. And it's a big shopping day. To tell us more is Jennifer Wang, co-founder of DealMoon.com.
Singles Day was actually created by a group of college students in China many years ago. And about 4 years ago, Alibaba, they actually used this holiday as a shopping holiday. And then on their site, they started to do 50% off and then created a huge buzz. So ever since 4 years ago, this shopping holiday has been growing in China. And then about 3 years ago, Diamond actually introduced it into the U.S., and we started working with our partners, our merchants, to create exclusive offers for Chinese American and also the general American in the Singles Day events.
Yes, that is a relatively new phenomenon here in the United States. As you mentioned, it's been going on in Asia for a little while. We're all familiar with Cyber Monday. Sales for that are pretty large, just under $3 billion. But Singles Day seems to be about three times that size.
Yeah, that is correct. It is true, actually, Chinese consumers are becoming more and more familiar with online shopping, even surpassing the U.S. audience, I would say. Especially the Singles Day, as I said, like in China, they created more like 50% off, so it is a huge buzz.
You co-founded a company called DealMoon.com. Tell me a little bit about your marketing strategy for this holiday.
So DealMoon has been around for 6 years, so we have been serving the U.S. audience and also primarily focused on Chinese-American audience. So our homepage is in both English and Chinese. We are a shopping advisory site. Every day we pick about 500 best promotions, deals and coupons, and also product recommendations and post on our homepage. We have a lot of exclusive offers from very big brand names as well and also department stores. So this Singles Day we have over 150 exclusive offers.
As originally an Asian-style holiday, I mean, is that transcending into more mainstream America?
I think so. So as I said, like beauty and fashion category merchants, they're traditionally, they're not really into Black Friday sale as much as the tech category. So because Chinese Americans, they are very savvy for really big brand names and also beauty. So we are seeing a lot of the partners using Singles Day sale as more like a Black Friday type of sale. And so we are definitely seeing a trend that more luxury items are having promotion on this day rather than Black Friday.
Jennifer Wang is the co-founder of DealMoon.com. Jennifer, thank you so much for being with us today.
All right, thank you.
Well, having won multiple awards for his classical and pop recordings, Italian singer Andrea Bocelli is looking to sell a few copies of his new CD, which pays tribute to the music that inspired him as a child. International Edition's David Byrd tells us about Cinema. It features hits from West Side Story, Breakfast at Tiffany's, Gladiator, and others.
Maria, I just met a girl named Maria. And suddenly that name will never be the same to me.
Andrea Bocelli says he was always inspired by songs from the movies. The singer fell in love with the songs he heard as a child that he didn't know came from movie soundtracks. Now he has teamed with his longtime collaborating producers David Foster, Umberto Gatica, and Tony Renis for Cinema. Bocelli says that he loves the freedom composers have in the movies to express the full range of emotions.
Well, my relationship with the movies is not so strong because since when I was younger, I didn't like to stay in a old seat with many other people, you know, for all the afternoon. And I preferred to see the movie at home with my family, in case. But I had a great relationship with the music of the movies, because the music of the movies is a very inspired and free and beautiful music.
No llores por mi Argentina.
Bocelli has chosen songs from a variety of films, including Evita, Breakfast at Tiffany's, The Phantom of the Opera, Gladiator, The Scent of a Woman, and Dr. Zhivago. The 57-year-old Italian singer, fresh off a performance for Pope Francis during the Pontiff's visit to the United States, says that singing pop requires a different kind of expressiveness than singing opera.
When you sing pop, you are like, you are singing like a very close to and the ear of a child, you know, because the microphone is very close to your mouth and you can whisper your emotion in the microphone. It's completely a different way. But the technique for the breath, the breath technique is the same.
Che più ti penso, e più mi manchi.
Bocelli, who has recorded duets with Celine Dion and Sarah Brightman on previous albums, includes one on Cinema with pop star Ariana Grande. The song E Più Ti Penso from the 1984 epic crime drama Once Upon a Time in America was re-recorded as a duet. The tune debuted at number one on Billboard's Classical Digital Songs chart. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website. That's voanews.com. We're also on Twitter, our handle at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Aydin Utku. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Whether you're a veteran or not, singles or not, we invite everyone to come back and join us again. We hope you have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
During the American Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln called on his countrymen in his famous Gettysburg Address to ensure that liberty shall not perish from the earth. His words have inspired many over the years, including millions in our nation's armed forces, who fought to preserve not only America's freedom, but that of other nations as well. Today, Veterans Day, America pauses to honor these men and women and the values of duty and sacrifice they represent. Long after they leave uniform, they symbolize what it means to be a citizen of a free land. The holiday, observed every year on November 11th, originated with the armistice that ended the First World War in 1918. The conflict, fought in Asia, Africa, scattered islands in the Pacific, and the waters off South America, as well as on the battlefields of Europe, was seen as the war to end all wars. But other wars followed, and in 1954, President Dwight Eisenhower expanded the holiday to honor all who have served in uniform, both in war and peace. Our government continues this effort to this day, with programs to help veterans leaving the military to find employment and ease their transition into civilian life. Honoring this sacred trust with America's veterans means doing all we can to help them find work when they come home, so they never feel as if the American dream they fought to defend is out of reach for them or their families, President Barack Obama said. At its core, though, Veterans Day isn't about war. It commemorates no battlefield victory or defeat. It celebrates no advancement of political or territorial ambition. Rather, it's a day of remembrance, echoing similar holidays in Great Britain, Canada, South Africa, and other nations that honor military veterans for their service and sacrifice.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.